This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
Question now, curse on ordering the previous question on the resolution. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The opinion of the chair, the ayes have it.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States.
Hello and welcome to TrumpCast. I'm Virginia Heffernan. So the groove is in the heart. That's my D-Light reference because it is time for some house music in here. Because yes, the House of Representatives approved the rules of the road to freedom, which is to say the procedures for the public phase of the impeachment investigation. D-Light would be delighted. This means, yes, the chances are now off the charts that the president is going to be impeached. It's a happy day at TrumpCast. Now, hold up. Of course that doesn't mean he'll be convicted in McConnell's Senate. It doesn't even guarantee that Trump will have a real trial in the Senate. McConnell's powers of blocking should never be underestimated. And we're certainly not assured that Trump will resign in a panic like Richard Nixon. Resignation. Donuts. Oh, sorry. Hands on the wheel. Hands on the wheel. Groove is in the heart. And it's also Halloween. Okay, so I'm not going to be Natalia Veselnitskaya like previous years, because who even remembers her? But I might turn hero side and dress like Maria Yovanovitch. I need to get her cool haircut in a wig pronto, if so. Also, in the spirit of Halloween, that Halloween-y word, boo, has, just for this year, gotten a new pronunciation. So ghosts of all ages, listen up. It's now pronounced boo. And may that beautiful syllable from the Great Nationals Park haunt Trump forever. Go Nats. My guest today is my buddy Jed Sugarman. He's a professor at Fordham Law School. He's got a BA, JD, and PhD in history from Yale. Come on. So he's kind of shooting from the hip when it comes to politics here. He probably reads mostly the Daily Mail and like Hot Corvettes magazine. Which I mean to say he's amazing and a walking library, but Jed also likes a risk or two, so I am here for it when he broadsides Robert Mueller for missing an opportunity or broadsides New York Attorney General Tish James for her passivity. Jed and I are going to talk about the state of play in the investigations of Donald Trump in his hometown of New York City, as well as all that peachy impeachment goodness going on down the Acela line in the nation's capital. But before I get started with Jed, on November 20th, coming up at 7 p.m. at the Bell House in Brooklyn, you gotta let Slate woman-splain the election to you. We will drone on in our grating shrill voices as Slate's amazing roster of women journalists come on for a live and off-the-cuff deep dive into the state of the election, followed by the ultimate debate watch party. Christina Cotterucci, Julia Craven, Ashley Feinberg, Mary Harris, Dahlia Lithwick, Nicole Perkins, and me, Virginia Heffernan, will explain, woman-splain, the ups and downs of the primary, shed light on the candidates, their policies, and their media coverage. So go to slate.com/live for the Women of Slate on 2020 in our greatest debate watch party ever. Jed, welcome back to TrumpCast.
Thank you for having me, Virginia. It's great to be here.
I get to behold you in person.
I know. This is the first time.
I've decided you're so true to your Twitter voice. Your Twitter voice is so authentic that when you come in here, you look like it. And your voice in editorials. I've loved seeing all this work you're doing for the New York Times, The Atlantic. So because I have a thought leader, so to speak, in the room with me, okay, we've got to start with something about the Nationals. Now, just yes, understand I know nothing about sports except when I identify a team like Tom Brady of the whatevers, mm-hmm, I decide that someone's Trump, then I root against them.
Yes, okay.
And I decided that the Nationals were anti-Trump because of the booing.
Yes.
So don't disillusion me about that there's any other way to read sports. You were saying the weirdest thing as we were just getting ready about sports this season.
Yes, we're talking the day after the Nationals have won the World Series. And what was remarkable in that series is that the home team went 0-7. So the visiting team won every game, and that's and the Nationals winning the shocking, you know, seventh game. But that was a pattern that has held up all through 2019. So across football, hockey, and basketball, the visiting teams have a record of 19-3. Which
okay
is not just, it's a surprise because usually we think the home teams have some advantage, but this is not a small N anymore. Mm-hmm. So there's something, maybe there's something in the water or in the air in 2019 where visiting teams, maybe that we're all high anxiety. So home teams have a higher level of anxiety, of expectations. But here's a twist, if we could tie this into TrumpCast politics.
Jed twist, yes.
So I would say that maybe the pattern is that the incumbent party in power, the incumbent president is a home team. And the visiting team is the resistance, is the challenger.
I thought that quarterback looked like Elizabeth Warren a little bit. What do you think?
Exactly.
I love this so much. And I'm going to only add, again, knowing nothing about sports, but also part of a transition to something I know a little more about, that possibly we're like all pro-immigrant right now.
I love
Don't
that.
Don't build a wall. We need a person.
We need visiting teams.
We need immigrants. They get the job done.
Perfect.
Okay. I believe, and I think everyone else does, that Nancy Pelosi is in the crescendo movement right now. And I just learned that crescendo is not a climax. Crescendo is mounting. It's building.
Yeah, sure, building up.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think you do too, but you've also paid much closer attention to the states and what other courts might do, the Second Circuit and Manhattan, and what they might do to the eponymous TrumpCast Trump.
So you went high culture with crescendo.
Yes.
I'm going to go low culture with the Avengers and Endgame. I think we're getting close to the end game, right?
There's that moment
where Benedict Cumberbatch's character says in Avengers, "We're getting to the end game," and then you get the next movie.
He says that in Infinity Wars.
He says it towards the end of Infinity Wars. We're getting to the end game.
they do a nice job getting you to roll into the next one.
Oh, segue. It's all a setup.
Yeah,
right?
It has felt like Infinity War.
So I think we're now shifting from a sense of an Infinity War of this going when it's interminable. The Trump era is interminable.
Yep.
So I now feel like we are now switching over to an end game. Now, let me emphasize that I'm not saying that the end game is impeachment and removal, but the chances. But so I think this is a part of an end game to November 2020.
Yeah.
But I think it's not off the table that there's an end game here where there's a possibility more of a Trump resignation. I'm not saying likely, mm-hmm, but I'm saying I've been tracking some of the prediction markets and the prediction markets can be rigged by people who are either wanting to drive results, but people are putting money on possibilities. And then
TrumpCast does not endorse offshore betting.
Yeah, exactly. But it's interesting how the number of people betting on Trump not finishing this term in office is creeping up higher and higher. So yeah, I would say a month ago, that number that people were betting 75-25 that he'd finish. And then that number over the last month has gone 30%, 70 cents that he'll finish, 30 cents he won't. And now we've crossed the threshold where it's under 70% chance. That is the same. We're getting towards the same numbers where of you know, Nate Silver's prediction of Hillary versus Trump. I think he concluded at the day of the election, 60-something% chance that Hillary would win.
Wait, so you're saying we can trust it absolutely
as long as it
tracks with Nate Silver pre-2016 election.
I'm saying that we should have taken Nate Silver seriously, that Trump had a real chance of winning.
Yes.
And now I think with our end game, I think we should start thinking about the real chance, not the likelihood, but an end game of, you know, what did Benedict Cumberbatch's character say? It was like a 1 in a million chance. We're in a 30 percent chance.
Okay, I want to talk about, I really do think this rolls into some of the state court. I want to talk about what I thought was an amazing number. I've always thought impeachment was a kitchen table issue. You know, the late Elijah Cummings was really invested in the House being able to do two things, at least two things, more than one thing. And we've seen Nancy Pelosi pursue drug pricing, her drug pricing bill, and a bunch of other things.
Right.
So yes, we are chugging along on the issues that we're always told are of interest to Americans. But what's also been sort of exciting to see is the American commitment to rule of law. And I'll give you this one example. I don't know if you saw this, but Anthony Scaramucci said that only 26% are now left in the hardcore base. And he gets that number from a poll 2 days ago saying that only 26% of Americans, and even including, I think, a minority of Republicans, say that Trump should not have to comply with subpoenas. What is amazing about that is I think we have, you know, there's something like 40 million lawsuits in America a year, and there are, you know, 2.3 million incarcerated people that brushes with the legal system and getting served and having bench warrants out for you and responding to court orders are something Americans do and have to do.
Right.
And at some point they say, you know, maybe it's clever to cheat on your taxes and maybe it's clever to, you know, Trump supporters, maybe it's clever to like have sex with porn stars and get off scot-free with your wife, like she doesn't leave you. But you know what? When the court says you have to come and appear in this day, I've always fucking had to do it, and you have to do it too. See, I was trying to sound like an average American with my swearing. But anyway, I found that very interesting.
That's
so
fascinating.
Right? Let's talk about subpoenas. Let's talk about Trump's lawyer, Consovoy.
Yes.
Who I think was an interesting player. I know this a little bit ago, but I came to believe Consovoy had said that Donald Trump could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue, forget about not complying with subpoenas, he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and still not be investigated because he's president. You say that's not exactly what
that's
he said,
not exactly,
even though it's a nice meaty
that's
quote.
That's right. Well, so let me first connect this back to my point about the end game.
Please.
Because this is about both federal and state investigations. So the big picture point I want to state, it's going to build into Consovoy's the actual dangerous argument that Consovoy made is that because we have a system where Bill Barr is controlling the Department of Justice, there will be no indictments. That was really Consovoy's dangerous argument.
Yeah.
So as long as Trump does not understand things, right? So so unless it's staring him in the face, he's going to just self-deal and self-imagine that he's above the law.
Mm-hmm.
We need state prosecutors to step up and do two things.
Mm-hmm.
Indict Donald Trump, right? State prosecutors need to do more than just subpoena. I agree with you that the subpoena is part of the end game.
Mm-hmm.
But we have probable cause now that Donald Trump committed not only federal tax fraud, federal criminal tax fraud, federal bank fraud, and federal campaign finance felonies, but William Barr is shutting all of that down.
Mm-hmm.
But many of those crimes, not the campaign finance, but tax fraud, the bank fraud, tax fraud, insurance fraud, are covered by New York State. Where is Manhattan DA Cy Vance?
Mm-hmm.
For 6 months, ever since Michael Cohen testified,
we
more or less had probable cause for an indictment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe we need to build a paper case, where have the state prosecutors been? Where has New York Attorney General Tish James, where is she been? She could bring a civil action against Trump Organization under New York law to investigate it for persistent fraud as a civil, not as an indictment, but as a civil investigation. And there's a civil process that almost every state has under this old idea, old English process called quo warranto, that can be used to revoke the corporate charter for any corporation. Being a corporation, your last guest, Ian Madrigal, talked about corporate privilege and white privilege.
Yeah.
Corporate privilege is a massive privilege for fake people, right? Corporate entities. And unlike real people, corporations can't go to jail and they don't die.
Mm-hmm.
So the trade-off is we're going to give corporations this magic power of under the law, but it comes with responsibilities. And we can take away those magic corporate powers if you engage in persistent fraud. Well, I can think of a corporation that's engaged now in persistent fraud.
Yep.
It's the Trump Organization.
Yeah.
So if we're going to play out an endgame, Donald Trump needs to just be facing more than just subpoenas for Deutsche Bank records. Or, we need him to see that he's facing actual indictments for state prosecution and facing the prospect of his most beloved child, Trump Organization, getting dissolved. right? And
yes.
That is, and that's not only a possible path. This is their responsibility.
Yeah.
So I would say of all the problematic people in the world that are on the in the Trump world, we also have a problematic set of Democrats who have not done their jobs.
Yeah.
And or delayed or trying to run out the clock. And
You're talking about Tish James.
I'm talking directly about Tish James.
Yeah.
And so let me connect this back. So I want to talk more about that, but I want to answer your question about Consovoy.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah.
Consovoy is Trump's private lawyer.
Okay.
In addition, he took Cohen's seat. Right. So Trump already has his law firm, the Department of Justice,
right.
doing his, you know, that's his personal fixers.
That's where Roy Cohn really
is, Bill Barr.
But parenthetically, I know we're not supposed to go off track here, but Bill Barr looks way more like Thanos, I think, in my vision. Just his head and neck. Thanos.
I like that. Yeah. We also talked before about the supervillains of, I think the last time we talked, you were talking about Trump as Sauron and Jabba the Hutt.
Yes. Smaug.
And Smaug, that's right. But
Sitting
I also think Dr. Evil, right? Because what was definitive about Dr. Evil was how dumb a supervillain he was.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
$1 million. Like, we need villains who are, you know, morons to be the model here. But anyway, to get back to Consovoy. So Consovoy is Trump's personal lawyer, and his briefs made a broader argument against the Manhattan DA went to state court for a subpoena from Trump's accountants, not Trump himself, but Trump's accountants for the tax returns over so many years. And then the Trump's lawyer Consovoy in the briefs made arguments about that because a president can't be indicted, a president can't also be investigated by criminal process, meaning subpoenaed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that he was making that argument about both state and federal. Right.
Oh.
So it was the briefs were broad.
Right.
But when he finally gets into court in the Second Circuit with an oral argument, he's somewhat careful to walk back how far he was pushing it against federal.
Right.
So when talking heads appeared that day, or when Twitter filled up with people saying if Trump shot someone on Fifth Avenue, he couldn't be investigated by anybody. And they pulled out one quote, Consovoy, you know, he was one of the judges asked what would happen if the president actually did shoot someone on Fifth Avenue. And he said prosecutors could do nothing. Then there was a follow up and he was asked for clarification. And he immediately tried to clarify. He actually apologized. He said, I mean that there couldn't be criminal process, meaning subpoenas. But they said, look, you could still have witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there was a shooting on Fifth, if there was a real clear and present danger, right, he's saying prosecutors could actually investigate. He said, we're not trying to stop the grand jury investigation.
Yeah.
We're just saying that the president and, quote, his custodians, meaning accountants were holding his documents, couldn't be subpoenaed. Now, it's still an extreme argument, and I think it's a wrong argument,
mm-hmm.
but it was, I think, misinterpreted. And he was leaving the door open. And here's the argument I wanted to emphasize.
Yeah.
He differentiated between the danger of state prosecutions. And the twist is that Consovoy actually cited one of my blogs. So I had written 18 months ago about the problem of state prosecutors, that it's a real question. I mean, you have to imagine if the shoe's on the other foot and you had President Obama or President Elizabeth Warren, what would happen if we allowed state prosecutors to run interference and try and shut down a presidency with a mix of bad faith subpoenas and indictments, et cetera?
Right.
So I wrote in my blog, imagine 100 state prosecutors in either red or, you know, in local red districts or local blue districts taking on in bad faith a president of the opposite party.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that could shut down a presidency if there were trials. And Consovoy cut out, without an ellipsis, took out of context that quote for investigation when I had explicitly said that the danger there was not, you know, they didn't put in the dot, dot, dot. But I said if there were hundreds of prosecutors putting a sitting president on trial.
Got it.
So I was differentiating.
This administration has a problem with ellipses, as we learned from Vindman
right.
a couple days ago.
Yes. So the bottom line is he was differentiating between the danger of the proliferation of state prosecution versus a federal prosecutor. They asked, well, what about, isn't that different? Because many federal prosecutors, aren't you making an argument against state and federal?
Mm-hmm.
And he walked it back. He said, more or less, it's a harder case to say that federal prosecutors should not be able to investigate or subpoena because at least you have the attorney general who has full control over the prosecutors.
Mm-hmm.
He thought he was making an argument for why there was a bigger danger of state prosecutors.
Mm-hmm.
I think what commentators should have picked up on is that he was actually signaling a more dangerous problem, which is that Trump can use, any president, but Trump in particular, can use his fixer attorney general to block federal prosecutors from investigating. And that's my point. point about why we need state prosecutors to have this power. Because a sitting president can manipulate and abuse and use the Department of Justice as his own personal law firm now, this is federalism. And I thought the conservatives embraced federalism, right? The idea is we have states because the danger of centralized federal power means that a president can shield himself from investigation unless we allow the conservative federalism of the states and prosecutors to be able to investigate, to be able to subpoena, and to also indict a sitting president.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So, I mean, one thing that, you know, so many predictions, so many people on this show, historians like yourself, have wondered what would happen, you know, and the kind of Tim Snyder thing, like what happens when you get a tyrant in the Oval Office.
Right.
But what happens when you get an obstructionist or a bulldog or whatever you'd call Bill Barr, you know, like a pit bull for Trump's id or something like that, you know, that he's willing, like Michael Cohen, to bend the law for this guy? Like, that is something we didn't expect. And we've been rolling with it now for, what, a year?
Yes.
And it has changed. That has changed everything, presence of Barr.
Yes and no.
Okay.
So on the one hand, we've never had anything like Bill Barr before. But we have had, for 100 years, the attorney general has been, more often than not, a crony or a hack for the president.
You'd go that far?
Yes, I actually wrote an article about this.
Okay, all right.
So it turns out that, and it's surprising because we sort of imagine that the 19th century is the era of patronage and cronyism, and the 20th century, the Department of Justice is this heroic,
civil rights. Right, where Trump always talked about Holder and Robert Kennedy as cronies, and somehow in the prejudice in myself that I've had to confront, where I say, what? Robert Kennedy, it was just incidental, he was brother of the president.
Yes.
They're not cronies and mobsters. Well, yes, that can happen to any party.
Exactly. So for 100 years, we've had more Bill Barrs and Bobby Kennedys than we've had the Holders. So Obama's DOJ was more of the professional. Holder was more of an example of the professional. So I looked back and I looked at three categories.
Yeah.
Professionals, politicos, and cronies.
Yeah.
And it turns out that Woodrow Wilson, so this starts in the 19-teens with a Democrat. And so what Woodrow Wilson has his cronies, then the 1920s.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of corruption. I mean, a tremendous amount of corruption in the teens and 20s, which was relatively new. And then even Franklin Roosevelt had more of his insiders, more cronies. And then so both parties. And then, of course, Nixon perfected this art.
Yeah, right.
And with Mitchell and Kleindienst, these are two, both of whom were then convicted for corruption.
We need Barr's wife, like Mitchell's wife, to like start blowing whistles.
Perfect. So the bigger structural argument I would suggest is we need to change the structure of the DOJ entirely. Make it an independent agency. For 100 years, we've had too much cronyism and corruption by both parties in the Department of Justice. I think it's now time to turn the Department of Justice as a quasi-judicial role.
Yeah.
And that's part of the legal doctrine. Make it independent from presidents.
How would that happen?
By legislation. You'd have to have the Democrats take both, you know.
Like the judiciary would be in the judiciary, branch.
Yes.
Like the DOJ would not be a part of the executive branch.
So I mean, make it like the Fed, right?
Yeah.
So the Fed, we're concerned with presidents manipulating interest rates. See what I'm saying? So it's not, you'd still have executive appointment.
It seems like Buttigieg would be down on. He loves the idea of pulling all the stitches out of everything. We're talking about cronyism and corruption at the level of the attorney general's office. But are you like the kind of Jimmy Stewart person that I am, where I'm just like, oh, I can't believe Tish James hasn't done anything? Like, I know that she's a Cuomo person and whatever. But Barbara Underwood, the acting attorney, New York attorney general, before she got there, set the table for her to do so much. I mean, what did that take Barbara Underwood an afternoon to dismantle the Trump Foundation and make it so none of them can sit on any boards?
That's exactly
like,
right.
She just like seemed to do this stuff in her sleep. And then we get an elected New York Attorney yep. General with all the protection of a governor, and she is paralyzed. And then Cy Vance, who has yes. a history of pulling back because he gets like, I mean, these things, these things are crazy. He got like some kind of seemingly payoff by Trump-adjacent people.
Kassowitz.
Mark, so,
yes.
The so watch your yeah. back bitch Kassowitz. Yes. And yet another one of these thug carny lawyers of Trump's. He donated something to Cy Vance and he made a criminal investigation of Ivanka and Don Jr. go away.
Yes. The lawyers in the Manhattan DA's office were ready to bring an indictment against Ivanka and Don Jr. for real estate fraud. And they yep. had the goods. They had emails that established a criminal fraud.
That they were exaggerating how occupied the buildings
yes.
were.
And it was fraud.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so they were ready to bring an indictment, and somehow Mark Kassowitz shows up with a check for, I think I have this right, for $25,000
sure.
or $50,000
yep.
to Cy Vance's reelection campaign. And just exactly coincidental with that, Cy Vance makes those indictments go away. If that indictment had come down on Ivanka and Don Jr., there's no President Trump. Right. There's
right.
no President Trump.
And that was a like easy deal. Are you somewhat shocked at the level of passivity on James's part and
yes.
and outright, well, what looks like outright corruption on Cy Vance's part?
Yes. Am I shocked about Cy Vance? No, because I knew about this. I mean, I've been following this and you know, the Harvey protecting Harvey Weinstein
protecting
Jeffrey Epstein. People can look this up. And then the flip side is when the winds shifted, Cy Vance then makes sure to bring an indictment on Paul Manafort which was basically double jeopardy. I mean, it was mm-hmm. It's not federal rules, but state law. New York state law says you can't try and convict someone twice for
right.
the same facts. And that's still a even though New York changed the law, the old law applies to Manafort mm-hmm. for ex post facto problems. So Cy Vance is actually one of the reasons why we should be skeptical about state prosecutors.
Right.
So I'm actually saying both things. I'm saying we should be skeptical about state prosecutors and politics
mm-hmm.
while we also need state prosecutors to step up and do their jobs.
You know, we've decided that there was an institutionalist in D.C. who might save us. Even Barr. Remember when Barr first
yes,
came in?
That's right.
And that there might be I see Ross Garber, everybody's favorite impeachment
defense
attorney.
Shout out to Ross.
Shout out to Ross Buzzkill Garber, as I call him. He's like always holding us back on prosecutorial zeal, which
yes.
feels so good.
Yes.
But anyway, Ross says he thinks that the person in charge of the origins investigation, this ridiculous, he
right.
might actually be some kind of sane good guy. Well, I'll believe it when I see it.
Yes.
But by contrast with the investment in institutionalism in D.C., we've seen this rabid in New York excitement about our avenging, hard-hitting, I mean, back to Eric Schneiderman, who's out of office for slapping women and,
yes.
you know, something worse than a Me Too moment of violence. And Eric Schneiderman, and then, you know, people were excited about his replacement, Barbara Underwood. She did pay off. But, you know, we've been like, oh, everyone's going to be Preet Bharara. And it's, you know, once
right.
he, whatever.
Right.
Well, obviously, New York has given Trump a pass since Atlantic City days.
Yes.
And the rogue FBI field office in New York has also been quite benevolent at strange junctures to Trump. And then we have Cy Vance. So New York can't get so excited that it's going to take this off his hands if Trump is never federally prosecuted and or if he's pardoned for federal crimes by his successor.
Yes. I'm glad you went there because we are still in the middle of the investigation. So Sheldon Silver was the former assembly, the leader of the New York Assembly, the
yes.
Democrat,
yep.
is still, he was convicted of corruption.
Right. That's
and
right.
And Dean Skelos was convicted.
Yes.
So we have in New York a systematic corruption within the Democratic Party.
Yep.
And Andrew Cuomo, too, is implicated
yeah.
in without ever having faced prosecution. You know, Tish James ran on the platform of holding Trump accountable.
Yeah.
And she has, like, let me give her credit, on kitchen table issues,
yeah.
Like health care
mm-hmm.
and immigrant rights, she has put more work into protecting everyday New Yorkers against some of the most direct
Which is
abuses.
A nice reelection
so,
play, okay.
It is, it does avoid, I mean, she did run on this federalism
exactly.
kind of argument that New York State has a role to play with holding Trump accountable. And the only thing that she's really done is seek a subpoena of the Deutsche Bank bank records.
Yeah.
So when I talk about this end game, right, it's important to know that pardons don't affect state criminal liability.
Yes, exactly.
But a deal, but Nixon, you know, Nixon made a deal with Nixon was pardoned by Gerald Ford. That was part of what enabled Nixon to resign, allegedly.
The promise of that pardon.
The promise or a nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Yeah.
And then he got it and then he was pardoned.
Yeah.
And I actually think that was a good resolution, right? It was more important for the country. I don't think it's the whole lock him up thing is not going to help, in my view, right?
Well, it's not going to help force him to resign. I mean, just because you went there and we were talking about the Nationals earlier, that discharging the anxiety that we've all felt being lied to all this time, just it's relentless and it's insulting and injurious to American minds to be told they have to sit down and shut up all the time because Bill Barr says there's no collusion because Trump says the exact inversion of the truth.
Yes.
And, you know, whether the sabotage is, you know, throwing a clog in the machinery or you know, spitting at the president or whatever, these are like well within our First Amendment rights.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, I'm not a big yeller of that, of locking anyone up. On the other hand, like, I mean, it was like, whatever.
Yes.
For those who sat through hang the bitch and lock her up, everybody has to be able to punch out at some point.
And catharsis. I get it. There was a certain degree of anxiety I felt when the lock her up chants were happening. And there is a mental shift that I'm having about what America is. Like, we've imagined that America is part of a Euro-American world, that America is part of a European sphere. And
that's
our notion
of
the North. Right? We talk about the North, the global North and the global South.
Yeah.
And we talk about the Anglo-American tradition. And over time, I'm beginning to see America as a kind of a post-colonial power, like Latin America. Like, we are increasingly like of these post-slavery, post-imperial colonization, you know, post-colonial Latin American dictatorships with real massive problems of the rule of law, like we see with Bolivia just last week of riots.
Yeah. It's crazy. Venezuela, Santiago, and Beirut all blowing up. We never talk about it on the show, but like the world's on fire.
Yeah, the world's on fire. And our self-conception that we have this strong rule of law, I'm more anxious. I mean, and let alone Europe. I mean, even if we want to say we're part of this Anglo-American, we have, between Brexit and Viktor Orban and Putin and Poland. I mean, we have a crisis of a culture of rule of law, even in the places it's the strongest.
Yeah.
And we actually may be weaker than we imagine. I think on one level, the lock her up chants had affected me emotionally in a disturbing way in the 2016 campaign when I thought that Trump would probably lose. Mm-hmm. There still was this sense that this was a turning point where the Republican Party, which was, you know, conservatives created the phrase rule of law. The rule of law is a deeply small C conservative point of view about holding back on politics. So when it used to be progressives and then so socialists, communists, progressives of the early 20th century were a threat to the rule of law, and conservatives created this phrase to hold back socialism. What's frightening to me is, first of all, that I'm embracing this deeply conservative concept, but I think that we have to be aware of this idea that democracy depends upon rule of law norms.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this for me is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
Following Vindman's testimony, I haven't even spoken to you since we heard from Taylor and Yovanovitch. You agree with me that we are entering either an end game or a crescendo. And what do you think it might look like?
I hesitate to make some predictions.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing to think about is the Democratic Party has had a set of leaders that reflects well on the Democratic Party that there are more women and people of color in leadership positions. But that great thing about the Democratic Party is also what prevents it from breaking through with the Trump base, because it's a lot of Jews, women, and people of color who are the spokespeople of this investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Mueller could have been the person as a conservative Republican veteran.
Right.
If Mueller had been able to you know, I've been on this show before criticizing Mueller. It was a missed opportunity. Yeah. But now we're going to see Vindman in uniform, John Bolton, Taylor, a series. I mean, there are some women in the mix and some of them are Jews, but they're a lot more. They look the part of the conservative white male who might actually be able to say things about Trump that might break through on a cultural level. And what will it look like? I think it's really important for the House.
I want to say something about that. I think the allegiance is to the so-called white ethnics, like Giuliani. Like, they're the ones in charge. Like, Trump pretended he was Swedish. He's from this thuggy German town. His family's from a thuggy German town, since we're speaking atavism. And, you know, he's surrounded, has always been surrounded by the aspiring petty thugs.
Right.
With Kellyanne Conway has a mafia background. Giuliani has a mafia background. And those are the people that, I mean, I like people who weren't captured. A huge revelation of the past 2 weeks has been that, like, people that looked like American heroes to Republicans, who, by the way, I was always on the fence about, like, you know, just because you killed people in Vietnam. I think our friend Karen Schwartz pointed out that swift voting started the process of dismantling people who served in the military. George Bush, and unlike his father, dodged military service in his complicated way. And we started to let Republicans, I mean, what's so strange is to see Pete Buttigieg and, bless her, Tulsi Gabbard, and before that, Eric Swalwell?
Bless your heart.
Bless your heart.
Southernism is bless your heart, Tulsi Gabbard.
Your heart. Yeah, Dobre Utra, Tulsi Gabbard. But to see people in uniform, including the Gold Star family, including recently Vindman, have the pins pulled out of that. I mean, they really have, there's nothing that lines up on their side.
Yes, but this is the dynamic
now.
I think
the base is different from the Republican spirit that we identify with Mueller and Comey before he converted. The base, you know, wants a spectacle. There are a repository for total irrationality.
Right.
You know, they supposedly do the opposite of everything. That's why, again, to try to bring it back around, I think that this idea of the shrinking base, because there are a group of people, hat tip Anthony Scaramucci, who don't think the president and the Republicans should be able to defy congressional subpoenas.
Yes. I don't mean to be naive here and say that the base is going to abandon Trump, but it's shrinking the base. It's some number
shrinking
of
the base.
Republicans who, you know, held their noses to vote for Trump and saw Hillary Clinton as a boogeyman and people of color, immigrants.
Yeah.
But then when they finally confront the facts of a dozen witnesses.
Yeah.
And you were never going to get with Don McGahn the kind of breakthrough.
Right. Because that's a good point.
And so in some way, right, like the Mueller report just didn't demonstrate in these stark terms the actual crimes. And Nixon, keep in mind, Nixon resigned when there was never proof of his knowledge in advance of that break-in. I think there's a possibility that between the House's strategy to have live testimony, and you no longer need the whistleblower. I mean, the whistleblower was not on the phone call, but Vindman was.
Right.
And Sondland's facing perjury charges.
Yeah.
Now. Not now, but in 2021. So there's a question of whether someone else is going to flip, right? What will Bolton say? There may be a domino effect where there is someone who has more direct accounting, or we're going to see something in some financial records.
Mm-hmm.
So the House is wise to have these live witnesses. And the other dynamic in the Senate is to understand that there are going to be some number of senators who will not vote with McConnell if McConnell tries to shut down the trial or keep it really cabined.
Mm-hmm.
The question is whether Murkowski, Susan Collins, and Mitt Romney, and maybe some of the other Republicans who are in trouble for reelection say, you know, we might not vote to remove, but I'm not going to take a bullet for Trump to shut down a Senate trial.
Mm-hmm.
But this all has to happen within a pretty tight time frame, right? I won't predict that we'd have a vote to remove.
Yeah.
But if we have a combination of this endgame of state prosecutors threatening, you know, bringing indictments, and we see all of this evidence come forward and Trump is facing deeper, broader kinds of criminal investigations for himself, then I think the prospect of a resignation deal, people dismiss it, but I think that it's something that we have to strategize around.
I absolutely, absolutely agree with you. I think that's really interesting. Thank you so much for being here,
Jen. As always, great to talk to you, Virginia.
That's it for today's show. What'd you think? Get on political ad-free Twitter and find me at Page 88. The show is at Real Trumpcast. And why stop there? Go on over to slate.com/TrumpcastPlus. Become a Slate Plus member. You can get discounts on tickets to our Women of Slate show and so many other things. Plus members get all of Slate's podcasts ad-free for only $35. That's like gremlin toenails and bat wings per day. Go to slate.com/TrumpCastPlus. Our show today was produced by Melissa Kaplan and engineered by Merritt Jacob. I'm Virginia Heffernan. Thanks for listening to TrumpCast and happy Halloween. Boo.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.